This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith sitting in. It is Anything Goes Friday. It is also Friday the 13th. And on this Friday the 13th, bad luck, or maybe something else, ended up robbing us of our means of communication, the telephone, allowing your calls to come in here. And if you think it is merely that I have a lot to say, that may be true. But I'm also interested, and we are also interested in recognizing that this show is your show. Sure as heck isn't my show. And we want to hear from you. Fortunately, there are a couple other ways to communicate. One is the Twitter feed. You can hit Tom Hartman. You can also comment in the YouTube if you're watching there. You can also tweet me at Jefferson D. Smith. You can also, did I get my text line? That might be a little dangerous. I'll give you my email address. My email address is jeffersonsmith@gmail.com. Yeah, if you want to text me, my mobile line is 971-275-2701. Hit us up. Here is from Kyle. Earlier in the week, you asked the worst possible thing the Trump administration could do. I thought of the Walter White meth lab in the White House basement. Trump has already been connected to child sex trafficking. All right, the Walter White meth. So would the Walter White meth lab in the White House basement, would that break down the red wall? Would that be something that got Donald Trump's support not only down to 40% or 36% or 42%, but actually would Fox News get off the Trump bus then? Another one, music resistance saying, listen to some 80s Reagan era punk rock. That's a good one. I thought about that. I've thought a lot about it. And I don't count myself an expert, but I've thought a lot about it, about how art intersects with politics and resistance and democracy. And the challenge I have with too much of it, this includes stuff that I love, including 80 eras, punk era, new wave and harder rock. It includes the Beatles and the Rolling Stones in the 70s and even the 80s, or the Rolling Stones. And it is that there wasn't enough connection to strategy. Now, that doesn't mean I'm suggesting that Paul McCartney needed to write George Lakoff's book. It doesn't mean that he needs to be going to the strategy meetings, but that we need to be interacting with more than just rage or pacificity. It needs to be vigilance. We need to be encouraging and sharing songs that hit us emotionally, because that is, of course, largely the purpose, that feed our souls, because whatever happens, we have one life to live, and let us love it as best we can. But also, I really like the one Eric McDonald's shared, because it was making the point that no amount of dancing is going to make us free. There's only so much dancing we can do that would ban the bomb, feed the starving children, bring justice and equality to you and me. Some other notes that we got in, and again, you can tweet me at Jefferson D. Smith. Want to say thank you and shout out to Todd Telford. Will the disgruntled Republicans in the silent center join with Bernie fans in fighting the conservatives who stole the soul of the GOP? If so, an inclusive America can be achieved, and true conservatives can take back the GOP. Democrats should help them do it. All right, I do want to address this one, how we think about political parties. The first thing is, my own take is, don't think political party first. You can vote political party first. You can go to your precinct committee. You can learn, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the progressive celebrity of the month, and hopefully longer than that, has reminded, as the Koch brothers reminded, that in a first-past-the-post system, the best chance at meaningful change is to occupy, is to influence one of the two major political parties. You can be really cognizant of party politics, but the way that I think is best to understand them is as not empty, but nonetheless vessels. The Democratic Party was the racist party until it wasn't anymore. And now the Republican Party is the racist party. And that doesn't mean that every Democrat was racist. And it doesn't mean that every Republican is now. But where white supremacists found their best sucker, where they found their best coalition was, and we have to be honest about that, the Democratic Party in the 1800s and up to the Dixiecrats. And over the last 50 years, certainly since the Nixon Southern strategy, has been the Republicans. And that demonstrates once again that the first principle shouldn't be party. The first principle should be humanity. The first principle should be democracy. The first principle should be equality. The first principle should be nurture. The first principle should be anti-oppression. The first principle should be making the world a little bit better, having a little bit better opportunity so lives can be a little bit easier. And that those need to be the first principles, and then occupy parties to do that bidding. The first environmentalist president was Teddy Roosevelt. He was a Republican. The progressive era was built with Republicans. Women's suffrage was fought for by Republicans. The Civil Rights Act was fought for by Republicans. No modern Republican can, with a straight face, claim that mantle and get any credit. But it is, in fact, true that if we are going to change the nation, it is not going to require merely one party. It is going to require movements that cut across barriers, racial barriers, religious barriers, and political party barriers. And I say this as someone who has been a proud Democratic Party precinct person, somebody who sees the apparatus of the political party as a key thing, that even strengthening that apparatus, and it ain't that strong right now. You think it is because it's a big name. But mostly, the Democratic Party is controlled by its financiers and the organizations that have direct membership and dough. And the DNC and the local state parties rely upon that. The local state parties, if you were to go to visit your county party, if you are a Bernie supporter and haven't done it before, you would find that the politics, setting aside if you disagreed on Hillary versus Bernie, if you started talking about climate change, if you started talking about progressive taxation, if you talked about the inheritance tax, if you talk about Black Lives Matter, you would find almost unanimous agreement that strengthening grassroots party infrastructure can be one of the smartest moves to use. But we can't think merely party first. You can tweet us at Jefferson D. Smith or at @Tom_Hartman. We got another one from Tyrant the Hawk. Perhaps the most perfect example of a modern artist of resistance is the band. Am I allowed to say P. Riot, or do I have to just say P. Riot? Pussy Riot, thank you. They went to jail for their beliefs in opposition. From Gladys Kravitz. What? A technical glitch during the Tom Hartman show? Blame Comcast. If only Tom were there. She said was there, but it's were there. A condition contrary to fact requires the subjunctive mood. If Tom were there to talk at length about the nature of the problem, he is ever powerless to remedy. And I'll say that because one of our previous listeners texted in encouraging people not to abide by the political movements that were begat from Karl Marx, but at least know the critique of capitalism that he offered. And what he offered was, if the promise of capitalism was everybody had a chance to get rich, what if the means of production, the means of getting rich, are held by too few? In an information era, and we'll talk more about this after the break, in an information era, how does a democracy work if the means of communication are held by a few? And if those means of communication that we have are ownership of radio stations, which progressives don't own, is cable companies who don't want net neutrality. How can democracy work if the means of communication aren't themselves democratic? That's not a Tom rant, but I'm Jeff, and this is The Tom Hartman Show. And we're honored to be with you. The call-in number isn't working right now, but at Jefferson D. Smith is, and we're going to be back in just a minute.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Jefferson Smith and Tom Hartman Show. We'll be right back.
A couple of texts coming over.
Hi, Jefferson. This is from Lisa Y. What's up, Lisa Y? I wish we could hear your voice. We will on another day soon. Listening to Trump's press junkets, I am wondering why no one is calling him for what he is, an extortionist, making all kinds of threats to get his way. Isn't that the very definition of extortion? Pretty close. It's extortion typically is threats of violence. It can be threats of other things also. If it's other things also, I think it's usually considered blackmail. Donald Trump, I didn't read Art of the Deal, and Donald Trump didn't write it. I don't know what it would have said about extortion or blackmail. But I do think there's at least a couple things going on. One is he can think of himself as a tough deal maker if he goes in and says something crazy. But also, and here's the lesson, and I will repeat it as many times as I'm allowed to do so. The bully pulpit works differently now. When the term was crafted, the bully pulpit meant radio, and it meant you got control or at least influence the newspaper headlines. Later on, and made most obvious in the Reagan administration, the bully pulpit meant that you could control the 24-hour news cycle. You could have a morning news briefing, and that could be the thing that everybody was talking about. And if you had elected an actor who was trained to be a gifted communicator and could read the lines, well, you had a first crack to read the best lines that were best for you. In the information era, in the social media era, it is different from capturing the newspaper headline on people's morning doorstep. It is different from the 24-hour news cycle of NBC, ABC, and CBS. You have to attract attention. And attention isn't only dominated by those outlets. Attention isn't only dominated by the power of the pulpit itself. To be a bully, you have to be bullyish, or at least you have to deliver the kind of content that other people share. And if you say something that other people are saying, well, it might not get retweeted that much. If you say something absurd, if you say something that gets other people to say, we can't say that, can we? That's not something we're supposed to talk about. And then we all retweet, look at this crazy guy, the crazy stuff he says. You're not supposed to say that, bad boy, Donald Trump, you floating baby over London. Well, then every time we've done that, we've allowed that to control the conversation. Not the morning newspaper headline, not the 24-hour ABC, CBS, NBC news cycle, but the feed on our phones, which is the modern-day television. The curators who are saying, this is what you should look at because isn't it crazy? The addiction more and more of us have, including me. And when I get just a little bit of natural heroin coming out of my brain when my phone buzzes and I say, oh, I better look at it. I better check out what crazy thing has happened. And he can control the discussion. And as long, and so everybody who thinks that that is all unintentional, oh, it's just because he lacks discipline. Well, he's managed not to talk about a lot of stuff. He's managed not to talk about the fact that he knew Justice Kennedy and Justice Kennedy's kid was his number one banker. He has managed not to talk about Stormy Daniels. He has demonstrated all kinds of message discipline. But he does control the conversation when he's crazy. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith.
It is Anything Goes Friday. And one of the things that went was our phone system. So if you're wondering why I'm talking a lot, it is not because I don't love you. It is because I do. And we are going to give you the very best we can, including responding to your excellent questions and comments, coming over text, coming in the YouTube feed, coming over Twitter. The easiest Twitter handle for me to check on my phone is at Jefferson D. Smith. We have got Courtney from Ukiah, California. I didn't even think I pronounced Ukiah correctly. You're doing a great job filling in. Thank you very much. Your energy, quite different from Tom's. Sorry about that. It's a welcome addition to the show. You're welcome for that. I have a great analogy I heard about the diversity of America I would love to share. I think you'd dig it. I didn't catch your email address, or I can send a lengthy text. It takes a little to unpack, but it's worth it. Oh, I recognize now you didn't necessarily want me to read that whole text on the air. That's fine. My email, I'll do my email address. That's easier. JeffersonSmith@gmail. We got Eric Murphy from Murphy, NC, which I think is North Carolina. Listen to early Metallica, any Megadeth CD. Go back and listen to Megadeth, Holy Wars. Thank you, Eric. I will. I appreciate it. No, like the punk stuff was real. And then how do we translate that into not just Rage Against the Machine by not doing stuff, but sometimes wearing our mohawk on the inside. Sometimes raging against the machine by doing nerdy, nerdy, nerdy stuff, like going to city council meetings, like arguing for zoning so there's more housing so that more people can afford their rent, by hanging out in the legislative lobby, because, by the way, the capital of your state legislature is your building, and you can go there as much as you want as long as the building isn't locked. And you can meet with legislators, and they will say yes to the meetings with you. How do we go from Megadeth to nerdy, nerdy stuff? This is essentially the question that I wrestle with. This is the exercise in the intellectual, verbal, and strategic gymnasium amongst which I dance. And I appreciate the texts and the messages. Let's check the Twitter feed real quick. And again, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. One of the Twitter feeds here is at Jefferson D. Smith. I was talking about, and I think it was during the free speech TV portion. Oh, it was just prior. The means of communication. That it is kind of funny that the phone lines went down on Friday the 13th. Ha ha, Knights Templar, you got your revenge. Jesus, it wasn't our fault. Tom Hartman is one of the good guys. But the idea that we have a precious few choices of how to communicate, and those precious few choices are not the platforms. There's lots of them. I'm littered with chat tools. I can do GChat. I can do Slack. I do Slack with my team. I can use the text message through my Apple as I plug various corporate brands. We still have radio and TV. We've got records. Heck, some newspapers even print paper. But the ownership of these things is in way too few hands. That we are being disguised, that the means of communication seem more small-d democratic, but they ain't. That's why net neutrality was and remains so important. And it's why the irony, the synchronicity, the frustration of losing our means of communication, or at least one of those means, a couple of those means of communication, on Friday the 13th is funny because of the Knights Templar, or ironic because of the Knights Templar. It also raises the point of why you are so important, of why building a community around values, around building a community around democracy, around communication, about the best idea wins, and while making sure we use every communication means necessary to build that community. Every time Comcast goes down and I'm reminded that I have to say the name Apple, Facebook, and Twitter, and Comcast, and I have to promote the brands and offer faux gratitude to oligarchs. Every time I do it, it reminds me of why we have to fight against oligarchy and why we need a love army and why we need a coalition of the benevolently irrational. The good people doing good things for no good reason. Without you, democracy is not possible. With you, it is. And you are priceless. Definition of priceless: worth a lot, not for sale. I'm Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Show. Marcia Sherman, Citizens United. I've always opposed the naming of that SCOTUS ruling because I find it more appropriate to name it Corporations United. Worst law in history for citizens. Thank you, Marcia Sherman. The reason it's called Citizens United, maybe Marcia knows this, I can't tell from the tweet, is because that was who was being sued. Because that was who was under complaint. Because that was the party. It was a right wing. That was the party to the matter. Citizens United was the name of a right wing group. And they won. And I agree that calling it Citizens United is a bummer, because if a citizen's going to unite about something, it should not be to further offer secrecy and unlimited purchase speech to economic oligarchs who want to control the means of communication. That was a mouthful. David Cochran, anything goes Fridays. You touched a little bit on it Monday. The media and most resistors concentrate efforts with Congress. Do you think more should be said in the resistance about changing local houses? That has been a Republican strategy for decades. Yes, David Cochran, I do. David Cochran, I don't know if your family or friends tell this to you enough, but you are a genius, sir. A genius. A poet, a scholar, a saint. someone who deserves praise and gratitude on a regular basis. You are absolutely right, and I could not emphasize it more if I came up with more adjectives on a moment's notice. That if we can change legislatures, legislatures draw lines. Those lines are determining congressional votes as much as or more than any other factor. A majority of the people did not vote in this Congress any more than a majority of the people voted in this president. And while Fox News won't tell it to you, there's a war on democracy, and we have anti-majoritarians now picking Supreme Court justices who will never have to be voted on. If we are going to build, we have to build from the bottom up. And the bottom up absolutely includes state houses. That's how I got into this mess. I didn't think I was going to do politics. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. Now I have the pleasure and the privilege of talking to you on this, the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. It's Anything Goes Friday, and anything is going. What's up, family? This is Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We are taking your tweets, sometimes your emails, and maybe at some point your phone calls. But right now, on this Friday the 13th, on Anything Goes Friday, one thing that went, the phone system. But our head is bloodied but unbowed. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the soul. We are the masters of our fates. We are the captains of our souls. All right, some other folks have been saying stuff. Blue Krampus. What's up, Blue Krampus? Just got to have to plug Gary Newman, who came out with the song My Name is Ruin, inspired by 45 pulling out of the Paris chords. Enjoy. Thank you, Blue Krampus. Got another one. Got to watch The Americans, the best TV show for understanding what's going on. Thank you for that. Richard Adloff. Perhaps it is time to discuss the demand for Christian Sharia law and their push to remold governance into a debased version founded in representation of the Christian Book of the Dead. Here's my challenge, Richard. Because I am challenged by your text, I will have to do further research so I have an intelligent comment. I will have various comments. I will hope to make them intelligent and even not ignorant. And therefore, I will parse that further before responding. Jake Becker, can't talk about music's influence on politics without mention of Floyd's Animals album, Pigs, Dogs, and Sheep. Thank you. Yeah, Pink Floyd doesn't get enough credit, either for being geniuses or for being, you know, on the right side of history. So shout out to Pink Floyd. All right. Todd Telford, some more of Todd's phrases. Hey, Todd Telford, are you the one? Todd, are you the purchase speech guy? If so, you are a poet and a scholar. If not, you might still be one. Here's some more phrases. Vote Democratic for your children's children. Vote Republican for your boss's boss. I will say it again. Here's Todd Telford. This is the Todd Telford moment. I was going to call it minute, but it might not take a minute, or it might be slightly longer than a minute. Vote Democratic for your children's children. Vote Republican for your boss's boss. I went low on my register that time. Racism is cancer of the soul. Everyone has the cure if they have the courage and humility to choose it. Oh, I want to dwell on this. This is for those of us who don't view morality as a static state, who don't view good and bad as permanent conditions. I have done ill. I have committed harm. I don't consider myself a good person. I just hope to be a better person. That as we think about racism, I mean, one of the challenges we get is it is one of the nastiest charges that can be thrown against another person. And if you say, sir, you are a racist, ma'am, you are a racist. Person of pronouns who you choose yourself, you are a racist. The response almost always is no, how dare you? That's such a mean thing for you to say. And maybe something like, I have met several people of color and some of them even like me. I think it is more accurate and more healthy or healthier. We say, yeah, I'm really working at not being one. Is our nation racist? Yeah. but we really got to work on it being less so. Is the world misogynist? Yeah. And we really got to work to bend the arc of the moral universe towards justice. And to give Mr. Telford his due again, racism, a cancer of the soul. Everyone has the cure if they have the courage and humility to choose it. Another friend who said a similar thing that says it's most helpful we think of racism as a disease that each of us, probably or many of us, carry, and that we have to root it out. And we don't have, and in the act of rooting it out, we don't have to feel bad about ourselves. We only have to feel bad about ourselves that we aren't trying to root it out. Tom Seaborn, liberal media are only as liberal as their conservative owners. Thank you, Tom. Liberal media, by the way, here's my thought on liberal media. It's first of all, it's just a political lie. To the extent that that lie stuck, it has two pieces of truth that I would offer. One, maybe three. One, it tends to be urban. And so it tends to have cosmopolitan sensibilities. It tends to be a little quicker in how people are using the modern parlance. And therefore, big media can feel alienating to people in smaller communities whose networks are less cosmopolitan. Another way that the critique can be accurate is that journalists and people who learn lots of stuff and decide they don't want to spend their whole lives just, I don't know, selling real estate, can have pro-democracy and pro-social values. That's true. It does not mean that their content benefits one political party over the other. And I think if you look since 1981, Democrats have only held the presidency in both chamber of commerce all at the same time for two times for 2 years in a row. 1981 was a long time ago. It is now 2018. So what is that? 37 years? Over 37 years, 4 years. This great liberal oppression of the right, these people that are being left behind, say InfoWars, Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, and the current president of these United States. They have been left behind in terms of political power wielded at the highest levels of both chambers of Congress and the presidency for 4 years out of the last 37. And that isn't, by the way, because a majority of people have said otherwise. No. Democratic Party has been a bigger party that whole time. Democratic candidates for president have won the popular vote more times than they've lost it. But one other way that I haven't heard talked about when the phrase liberal media comes up is the liberal tradition. That doesn't mean the same thing as the progressive tradition. That doesn't mean the same thing, certainly, as a Democratic big or small D tradition. Maybe, lots of overlap, though, with the small D. The liberal tradition being the tradition that says it is not a tradition merely of religious-based authority. The liberal tradition that reason is something that we should govern ourselves with. And the media, at its best, has been liberal in that sense. But it hasn't been liberal in the sense that it wants to fight against oligarchy sufficiently. Over those last 37 years, since 1981, we have also seen the erosion of the middle class, the melting of the planet, the stripping down of our democratic norms, infrastructures, and rules, and the biggest wealth disparities in 100 years. And if the big, scary media were on the case on that stuff, well, maybe it'd be different. Pat Rod. What's up, Pat Rod? The only thing Trump could do to lose the support of his followers is to shoot himself. Otherwise, they're with him no matter what. Here is R. Stefiak. Oh, at Ryan Throne. What's up with new indictments? Okay, I will talk about this in the next segment. There are 12 new indictments. This is real-time stuff. You listen to the Tom Hartman Show, we'll give you real-time stuff. And one of the real-time stuff is Bob Mueller just won indictments for 12 more Russian officials. Doesn't mean he can extradite them. Doesn't mean they'll ever face. If Donald Trump wanted to talk tough, he would let people in the room with him when he was talking to Putin. He'd say, you got to turn over these 12 people to actually face justice in the United States. And the reason we need to is because you, Vladimir Putin, say you didn't have anything to do with the election of the United States. Let us work with you on the investigation. And to work with you on the investigation, we don't want to give you our passwords so that you can further manipulate our technology. No, turn over the 12 officials. Let us interview them. Let us interview them. They're indicted, and we will give them, we're not sending them to Guantanamo Bay, we will give them the full protection of the United States legal system. They get to have a lawyer. They get to have their day in court. They don't have to speak against themselves if they choose not to, but let us have a chance. If the president really wanted to talk tough, if the president really cared about the truth, there's lots of stuff we could be doing. And there's lots of stuff he could be talking to the head of Russia about. And that's one of them. We'll talk more about that soon, I think. More from Tyrant the Hawk. Tyrant the Hawk, Trump would have referred to Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward as fake journalists. Yeah, you might be right. By the way, this is the Tom Hartman Show. The phones are down. The spirit is strong. The mood is vigilant. The community is loving. The day is beautiful. The camera is working. But you might not be watching us on a screen. Tyrant the Hawk was saying, again, making the point, we got to listen to punk rock. I responded saying, love the point. How do we translate and channel the punk cool and the politically nerdy? So the same way it's always been done through the teenagers. All right, I agree with you, Tyrant the Hawk. We got to talk to the teenagers, and we got to talk to the teenager about translating their resistance into doing stuff. And you can text us at Jefferson D. Smith. You can also get us at Tom_Hartman. My email address is jeffersonsmith@gmail.com. What else do we got? We got Bill Allman. I said Bill Allman. Oh, here's Bill Allman again. Oh, no. And where'd they go? Oh, thank you. Joy Tao, profits over people reign today. Oh, there's Joy Tao. Profits over people reigns today. Predatory capitalism is destructive, not productive. Thank you for your note. Robert Steve Vader Jr., per the language issue, don't call them midterm elections, call them congressional elections. Thank you, Robert. You are a poet and a scholar. Congressional elections, midterm sounds like they don't matter so much. Here's what he says. Everyone hates Congress. We have a chance to change that every 2 years in congressional elections. Thank you. If you hear someone on local or national media say midterm elections, midterm of what? Just the president? That's dumb. That's not most of the things that get elected. It's not most of the decisions that get made. Midterm, always a stupid word. Robert Steve Vader, might not pronounce it that way, always a smart, virtuous, and wonderful person. Ever since he had this brilliant pronouncement, they are not midterm elections, they are congressional elections. This is the Hartman Show. It's also your show. And thanks for making the show a good one. We'll be back in just a second. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for video and audio archives. What's up, Free Speech TV? Here's one thing that I wanted to bring up. It is a Washington Monthly article. I might end up bringing it twice. I'm going to tease it now and I'll bring it up more later. The headline is Winning is Not Enough. Free Speech TV, y'all get extra credit. And that extra credit is, I'm going to give you a little teaser we're going to talk about in case you want to offer really intelligent thoughts that could help enrich the conversation. And I recognize the conversation is mostly my voice today because I can't put, and we can't put, your voice on air, but we can say it, we can use your words, and we can have the opportunity of having your insight shared. The easiest way probably is at Jefferson D. Smith on Twitter. If you don't have Twitter, you can email me, jeffersonsmith@gmail.com. If you don't have email, you can yell really, really loud, and at least your neighbors and office mates will hear you. Winning is not enough, is the Washington Monthly article. Democrats are focused on taking back power, but our democracy depends on them keeping it. To do that, they have to start thinking differently. The fact that I offered, I have to give credit to Paul Glastris of the Washington Monthly, who wrote that article and reminded me that Democrats have only had the trifecta, only had the presidency in both chambers of Congress two times, two-year terms in the last 37 years. And if we are going to save democracy, if we are going to actually beat back the rule changes that are making us an anti-majoritarian, not just racist, not just oligarchic, not just pro-rich and anti-poor, not just destroying the environment, not just anti-woman. If we're going to have a democracy that functions, if it's going to be roughly majoritarian, Democrats will have to hold power for more than just one spell. And that means they're going to start thinking differently. Grateful Dead, this is from Joe Eastman. Being a longtime Deadhead, I must shout out for a song that is just as pertinent decades later. Picture a bright blue ball just spinning, spinning free, dizzy with eternity. Shooting powders back and forth, singing black goes south while white comes north, and the whole world full of petty wars singing, I got mine and you got yours. Yeah, shout out to the Dead. Again, we've got to champion art. One of the reasons why they marginalize Hollywood and artists is because in order for oligarchy to control, it has to keep down truth and spirit. It's its only chance. There is not a majority of the United States of America, if given full information, if allowed to use their sober second sense, if allowed to communicate with their neighbors, including their neighbors that don't live next door or don't look like them. There is not a democracy that will vote to do deep harm over time to future generations. There is not a democracy. I even think of women's suffrage, and it's a small thing. And the danger of this fact is that it centers men, and that should not be the center of that story. But even in women's suffrage, in order to have women's suffrage recognized, there had to be a vote. And the only people who were eligible to vote were dudes. Even when we were beating back one of the most obvious, glaring, and stupid examples of an unjust American history, even a majority just of dudes, and in fact, almost entirely white dudes, said, yeah, you're right, this is dumb. We got to do it better. And the only way to keep that spirit down is to tarnish the truth tellers and the song singers and the storytellers who can help us find that truth. We got to champion that truth. And the thing I'm adding is we've also got to translate it to nerdiness. We got to be nerdier. This is the Tom Hartman Show. Fortunately, I'm somewhat of a nerd. We are joined by Skype, not a telephone, by Skype, by Luke Vargas, Talk Media News, talkmedianews.com. Luke, I've been talking a lot. If you would like me to ask a question, tell me so. Otherwise, you can just speak your piece for the entirety of the segment, and thank you for joining us.
Well, that's no fun. The give and take is the benefit of live radio. But I will just note that I'm joining you today from Estonia, the capital, Tallinn. I just arrived here several hours ago after being embedded with NATO troops in Latvia for the last day.
And are you bragging?
I was not firing any guns or launching any rockets. I did drive an Albanian drone, but that was about it.
Do you want to talk about the Albanian drone or you want to move on?
No, let's move on. Right. They probably wouldn't want me talking much about it. I mean, we obviously had the major NATO summit, and I still think European leaders are trying to figure out what the heck happened, and trying to. I think there's a broad consensus that the individual calculus that most leaders have been operating on, which is either flatter this guy in an attempt to get him to spare you humiliation, which has been Emmanuel Macron's tact, has failed. Trying to paper over the wedges that he's opening up within the alliance, as the NATO Secretary General has done, is also unproductive because it ignores the true and, you know, threatening way in which President Trump is undermining the alliance. And these leaders are also realizing that their own countries want them to defy Trump, that the saying in Germany, at least right now, is, you know, whatever Trump asks of the Germans, the opposite becomes immediately the most popular issue in the country. And yet we emerged out of a very tumultuous two-day meeting with most leaders still sort of stuck standing on the sidelines. And now that they're a little bit away from the meeting, senior officials I've talked to say this is not sustainable, that there's just no way we get to 2019 or to a NATO summit in 2020 with President Trump still in office and continue to go through this, that there is going to be a movement to stand up to him at some point. It's just about someone picking, you know, selecting themselves to be the first one to do that. So anyways, it's been crazy. And my goal was to go and see NATO out in the field to see what they were doing, what its benefit is, instead of just hearing the political leaders in Brussels talk about what NATO is doing.
All right. So what are the could you have a read, being that you have now driven an Albanian drone, and that means you could have gotten into rooms that you couldn't fit yourself, or view little fields and courtyards that you were not invited into. Do you have some insight on how the NATO consensus is reacting, and how much they are, how much the United States as a country and United Statesians as people are going to suffer for the vehement disgust of our current president?
Well, how Americans suffer is tough to read. I mean, American suffering is traditionally not why we, you know, averting American suffering is not necessarily why we continue to prop up NATO. We're doing it for the benefit of close allies, allies we supported for decades, and it would be silly to abandon them now. I mean, at least here in the Baltic, I can't stress enough the extent to which political leaders say, we really want to continue our partnership with the U.S. They were the most vocal in opposing Soviet occupation. They were incredibly useful in pushing for the pullout of Russian, you know, Soviet troops from this region. It would seem silly now, after decades of doing all that work, to now sacrifice the defense of this region, which is possibly something Trump might do on Monday. And my challenge on social media the past few days has been to Trump supporters to say, pick a policy, something Trump might concede in Helsinki, and defend it now before he does it and then you start agreeing with it. Namely, advocate halting the enlargement of NATO, which is something the U.S. has been cheering on, but something Putin wants to end. Advocate suspending our military drills in the Baltic, which are seen as a very, very important deterrent to Russia. Advocate lifting U.S. sanctions on Russia. Advocate recognizing Crimea, or advocate abandoning the Syrian Kurds and going into some sort of counterterrorism partnership with the Russians in Syria. I mean, these are all things that Putin has been asking the United States to do, and I would not be surprised if Trump picks from that menu of policies and does any one of them. And finally, I guess my just one comment on NATO, because I guess we've got about 2 minutes left, is, you know, Trump has been asking for a major military spending increase. And everyone I've talked to has said, yes, that can be done. Most, you know, a lot of countries are continuing to increase spending. It's about, I think, 4% annual increases at the national level every year. They're not going to get to 2% quickly, all of these countries. They're definitely not going to get to 4%. And the point here is that these countries can't absorb military spending like that. I mean, it would just like Los Angeles, where, you know, when it rains, all of the plumbing is designed to get the water to the ocean right away. Instead of soaking it into the ground, these militaries in many parts of Europe would not know what to do if they had to dramatically increase military spending. Much better to focus on spending more wisely, telling countries to buy equipment together so that they can get kind of bulk pricing. Spend better, spend more wisely, buy American, but don't necessarily just waste your money throwing it away for some top dollar amount.
And before they
those are not things Trump is advocating.
Yeah, and before we get kicked off the air and go to break, is there a chance of backfire? We've seen that support for the idea of immigration has increased during the Trump administration after all of his vehement attacks on immigration. Is there a chance within Europe, within NATO allies, that Trump's attacks on NATO build support for NATO in those nations? Is it also possible that his trumpeting of greater military spending by them starts changing the conversation to, well, hey, yeah, we can make it fair by the United States reducing our military spending? Any chance of backfire?
You know, I'm concerned, because typically, you know, averting a decline in public opinion overseas would be reason enough not to pursue a policy. Trump doesn't care about that, and he has trade and tariffs as leverage.
Luke Vargas got kicked off by Skype. Luke Vargas, Talk Media News, talkmedianews.com, smart dude. Good looking, too, if you can see his picture. Thank you so much for being with us, Luke. We're going to be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.